Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, everybody. First, before we start off, I want to give praise to Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah, Rabbi al-Alameen. Tonight's topic is failure of a black man. And the reason why I picked this topic today is to focus on a lot of things. The statistics regarding African-American men was very alarming to me. And, you know, some people think that I have an issue with African-American men. That's not the case. I have family members that are African-American.
I'm going to really inquire about why is the rate of African-Americans incarcerated so high in the United States and practically throughout the world. I want to leave this call open to any and everyone to call in and ask questions. You can remain anonymous. And complying with Islamic law, we will not ask you what you were incarcerated for. Those reasons, I do not need to know. My main questions would be in regards to your situation inside of jail and your situation coming out of jail and into the streets and things of that nature. I will not ask you what you were incarcerated for. I also would like to leave it open to hear from women that were incarcerated. We know that the rate of male African-American men is very high, but the number of African-American women being incarcerated is also growing at an alarming rate. Another group of African-Americans that is growing at an alarming rate that is being incarcerated is our youth. We have children from the ages of 8, as young as age 8, and under 16 years of age, being incarcerated and charged with, as an adult, for crimes that they have committed or may have committed. It reaches home because, you know, I grew up in West Philadelphia, South Philadelphia, and, you know, I have family members, I have friends who have been incarcerated and still are incarcerated for crimes that they may have committed and some that they didn't commit. It just alarms me that, you know, when I look at the number of people who are being incarcerated and then factoring in African Americans, it's astonishing how high that rate is. And then I look at the educational system. You know, I incorporate the educational system, and I see, I don't live in Philadelphia, but I do follow the statistics within Philadelphia, looking at the number of schools that are closing down, and now they're opening up more prisons, they're opening up more youth detention facilities, and they're not focusing in on education. You know, there's hardly any regular public schools now. Like, they have these charter schools. So the charter schools, you have to usually sometimes apply for these schools by a lottery. So if your local neighborhood schools aren't regular public schools anymore, your children didn't have to find a way to get to a public school if you weren't successful in getting into that charter school by lottery. And again, if you do get your child into that school and they come about some kind of conflict or they have some issues with students or teachers or whatever have you in that charter school and they're kicked out, now you have to find a school that would be complacent for them to go to. And within the city of Philadelphia, those schools weren't fit for animals to attend. And it's sad because then you have your child put in a situation where now their education is at risk. And we all know if your education is at risk, then you have a more higher chance of being incarcerated. And, you know, they say if an African-American male doesn't make it by the third grade, if he's not reading on level, if he's not, you know, adhering to the different tasks and different educational processes that they go through by the third grade, they already have him fitted for being institutionalized by putting him into these correctional facilities. The correctional facility is becoming a big business. What the government and government is doing is they're taking the power out of the state and the local governments to facilitate these facilities, and they're looking to big business. So the more secure that you can make your facility, the government will fund you more. So if the government's going to fund you more, how do you fulfill these new prisons? How do you do it? Well, you do it by going to inner cities and finding people to put into these systems. And how do these people defend themselves? They can't, because they're low income, they're poor, they don't, you know, have the access to the resources and so forth. So then you become a part of the system. And once you're in the system, that's it. Like, you're stigmatized for life. It's basically a black eye on your record. Anytime someone pulls up your, does a background check, federal or statewide, they're going to see that you were incarcerated. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of times when people do pull these records, you could have been locked up for a misdemeanor. You may not have been charged for a crime, but it's still there for them to view. So when you say, oh, I don't have a record, and you may not have one because you were never convicted of a crime, but if you were arrested, the employer still sees that information. They see what you were arrested for. It's still out there for them to see, and we all know they can use that against you as making a decision. Okay, this person was arrested 20 times. But we see that they never were convicted. Like, what were they doing to even put themselves in that situation? It opens the door for a lot of different things. So it gets frustrating for people, you know, who are applying for various jobs to get them, you know, try to move forward with their lives after being incarcerated. Anybody that wants at area code 805-727-7013 and press 1, and you can speak with me and we can talk about various topics, you know, your situation from being incarcerated, things of that nature, whatever you want to discuss about, you know, coming out of jail and back to the street. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to run through some statistics that I read up on, and they really stuck out to me because I was just like, wow, like, these rates are like crazy. These numbers are crazy. And like, how can we prevent this? Like, my ultimate concern is not just to talk about it, you know, like, we could talk all day about, you know, what we want to do and how we want to do it, but how do we really implement this in our daily lives to prevent our children, you know, our sisters, brothers, cousins, nieces, nephews, whoever, from, you know, being incarcerated? Because, I mean, just getting arrested alone can be, you know, a hindrance from you ever moving forward in a career, unless you're like trying to be an entrepreneur and run your own business. But even that can come with some stigmatism. You know, me working in corporate America, like, people don't understand. even if you own your own business, and let's just say that you need a business loan to be able to finance your company to either, like, you know, open it, get it up and running or whatever, or you need a loan to help with the building of a building that you may occupy, those banks run background checks. And they're not just running background checks on the members of that particular company. They're running background checks on the finance director, the payroll person, anybody that has access to that account that you may open, anybody that will touch it, like whether or not they're going to be doing it online banking, to pay down your loan, to get an advance from the loan, anybody that has access to that, they're running background checks on it now. So what that means is you might not have a record, but let's just say that your payroll person who handles all the payroll and things like that has a background record. We're running background checks. We're running your name through OFAC PEP, which is like to see if you have any ties to terrorism. Like, people don't understand the level of what happens when you get arrested, or even if you have bad credit. If you have bad credit, if we see a lapse in your credit, we want to know what happened during that time. Like, why weren't you paying any bills? It's so much deeper than what people think. So to try to understand this, this is why I put the call together, because I want people to not only understand the various aspects and the negativity that's even associated with getting locked up. I want to be able to provide information for you guys for available resources that's out there for you. People don't understand, like, you know, nobody's going to help you. You're grown. You're an adult. Nobody's going to help you. No one's going to direct you once you get out of prison. They're just going to, like, basically either you go to a halfway house or you have to go to a relative's or a friend's house address or whatever like that. The parole, probation office, whoever has to come there, look at the house, come check up on you, so forth and so on. Those people don't care about you. Their job at the halfway house and the probation officer and the parole officer, whoever they are, their job is to watch you to see if you slip up. Their job is to make sure that if he slips up or she slips up, leave and turn, they get a sheet. Like, how many people can you get locked up? You may get a bonus. You're monitoring maybe 200 people on that list. If you can get at least 50 of those people locked back up, we'll give you a bonus check. Those people don't care about you. They have nothing beneficial for you. They don't want to see you achieve anything. If anything, they want to see your demise. So how do we keep our brothers and our sisters out of correctional institutions? What can we do to help you not take that route again? So looking back at some of the statistics that, you know, that I've seen and were very alarming to me, from 1980 to 2008, the number of people in jail increased from 500,000 to 2.3 million. And that was as of 2008. So I'm sure that number has increased significantly, like, over those last couple of years. I'm sure that number has increased. The U.S. is 5% of the world population and has 25% of the world prisons. That's just not settling either. Like, okay, we're only 5% of the world population, but yet we house 25% of the world's prisoners. That 25% should be in the reverse. Like, it should be less than the world population. We should have less people in jail. But we have way more almost 20% more. Why is that? Why is it that we have the country with the most people incarcerated? Why aren't these other countries' numbers as high as ours? Why is that? Combining the number of people in jail with those under parole or probation, one in every 31 adults, or 32% of the population, is under some form of correctional control. Let me repeat that. Combining the number of people in jail with those under parole or probation, one in every 31 adults, or 32% of the population, is under some form of correctional control. Does that not alarm you? I mean, reading it, does that not alarm you? That, yeah, we might not have all these people in jail, but you still have to report. You're still on probation. You're still on parole. You still have to answer to a correctional facility or a correctional program, even though you're out on the street. And why is that number so high? Because out of that 1 in 31 people, half of those people are going to recommit a crime that will open up a new case that they will get charged with. Then they will throw the back time that they owe, which is usually anywhere between 5 and 10 years. So not only are you going to get you're going to get convicted on a new charge, which could be anywhere from 3 to 5 years or whatever have you, then you're going to get your back time added onto that. So this goes back to my earlier statement. These correctional facilities in the United States are not geared to rehabilitating anybody. They're geared to keep you there. And if you get out, we're going to watch you. We hope you slip up, because we're going to put so much stipulation on you that you're going to screw up and you're going to wind up right back in here. African Americans constitute nearly 1,000,000%, or 1 million of the total 2.3 million people incarcerated. That number is sickening. I'm sick to my stomach just reading those numbers. That's insane. 1 million of the 2.3 million people incarcerated are African Americans. No one's upset. No one's feeling some type of way about that number. Why is it? Why is it that African Americans are the largest population incarcerated? Why is it? We need to get our hands wrapped around this. It's unnerving. It's very unnerving to me. African Americans are incarcerated at nearly 6 times higher as whites. So you could commit a crime the same as a Caucasian. You're going to get convicted of that crime while they walk away. Why is that? How can we prevent you from even being put into that situation? Is my question. What is it that we need to make African-American men and women and juveniles aware of not putting yourself into these situations to avoid being incarcerated? African-Americans and Hispanics comprise 58% of the total prison population. That's scary. So if you go to a jail, 58% of the time going to be African Americans and Hispanics. That's just unnerving. But some of the other things that I read up on in regards to that is that because the reason why those rates are so high is because African Americans can't afford the lawyers. They're not educated enough to know what questions should be answered or asked. They usually accept the plea bargain that is still totally insane. They don't understand the charges that were, you know, asked of them or presented against them. So without them having really the knowledge to understand the charges and what the charges mean and what the charges stipulate, they accept those plea bargains when really they shouldn't have, and it leads to greater problems even inside jail and once they get out. 1 in 6 black men have been incarcerated as of 2001. That's scary. And I looked up what that meant when they meant incarcerated. It didn't say arrested, it said incarcerated. So that led me to look into that statistic a little bit further. And when I looked into that statistic a little bit further, I was like, okay, it's not saying that they were arrested. Okay, so this means that they had to be convicted of a crime for it to say incarcerated. So I looked up that and to see what the numbers were, like what made it 1 in 6. And what I found out was the number one reason why African American men are incarcerated is due to drugs, some form of drug dealing, some form of having the drugs on you, within your vicinity, in your system, if they did a drug test, so forth and so on. So I looked at that a little bit deeper to see what drugs African Americans were convicted on, and to compare that with the statistics on what drugs people of other races were convicted on. Okay, so African Americans, they were arrested for possession, intent to distribute drugs. It was 80% why they were convicted was due to cocaine. They had some form of cocaine. And being the inner city and, you know, in urban neighborhoods, the form of cocaine that they were arrested for was crack. Now, when I looked at the number for Caucasians to see what they were arrested for and compared that to what African Americans were arrested for, the number was the same as far as drugs, they were, you know, arrested for having drugs, intended to distribute, and so forth. And the drug that they were arrested for was not always cocaine. Matter of fact, the numbers for their drug that they were mainly arrested for was heroin and methamphetamines, or meth. Cocaine came third in ranking, and looking at the time that African American men would have served versus Caucasian men, 82% of the time, did not receive the maximum sentence that was available for those crimes. However, African Americans, almost 98% of the time, received maximum sentences for their crimes. Now, if anybody knows anything about drugs, Yes, crack cocaine is the devil. It's the devil. And it has torn apart a lot of families. It has ruined plenty of lives. It has destroyed families. It has destroyed careers. It has torn the fabric of the urban family apart. If anybody grew up in the 80s and knows anything about what crack did, then you would know it's a horrible, horrible drug to be addicted to. But with that being said, if you ever seen someone addicted to heroin or meth, crack is like sipping a cooler. It's, crack has no comparison to heroin or meth. Crack would, yes, it would make you sell your mother's meats out your freezer, sell your TV, your VCR, and stuff like that. But meth and heroin, they will have you sell your own child and let your child be raped in front of you for that high. It's a whole different animal. So this goes back to say that African Americans receive more time for selling crack cocaine, which is just a bad drug. Yes, it destroys families. But Caucasians get less time for selling heroin and methamphetamines. And this drug will make you kill your mother and make your father watch. That is something I don't get. So that goes back to why I'm doing this call. We have to prevent African American men from being even put in those situations where they would get arrested. How can we get more African American boys graduating from high school, going into college, becoming successful, rearing good families, and formatting the home back to the structure that it's intended to be? Husband, wife, children, you raise your children up in a way that they should go with, you know, a strong foundation in religion. Make sure that, you know, the children have all that they need, not what they want, but all that they need, so that they can then become good products in society and move forward. I'm going to open up the line again to see if anybody has any questions. Feel free to call in at 805-727-7013 and press 1. You could speak with me and we can, you know, talk about different various things in regards to the topic, from jail to the streets. How can we prevent African American men from being arrested and incarcerated? So I'm just going to go back to reading some statistics, which is the next part of the call. And I just want to focus a little bit in on African American women. 1 in 100 black women are in prison or in our prison system. That's alarming. It's very alarming. Because we all know that without mothers, the home's foundation is shaky. Now, we're not saying that the fathers can't raise kids and rear the kids, because there are some men out there who can do it and are doing it and have done it. But when you don't have a mother, a stable mother that can rear the kids behind the father, you have a society that will grow up and will be a failure. We all know that moms are strong, and yes, mothers can send, you know, take care of the house, rear the kids, work, clean, help with homework, you know, make sure the kids are straight, everything like that. You know, we know that single black mothers can do that. But what happens to the family when you have children, you're a female, and you're incarcerated? Well, let's look at some of the statistics from here. If you have a black woman who's incarcerated, here comes an alarming statistic rate. 92% of the time, the children's father is also incarcerated. That made me sick to my stomach. And the reason why it made me sick to my stomach is, who is then raising these children? Who are leading these children in a positive direction? Who's doing it? Who's available to do it? If you look back, like I said, if you're in my age group, which I'm an 80s child. I was born in the 70s, so I'm an 80s child. So again, if we go back through the timeline and we look at it, in the 80s you had crack. Crack was very prominent. It destroyed the family, so forth and so forth. So if you look at that, then that means that the kids who had crack parents in the 80s, they then went on to have their own children in the 90s. So if they were having kids in the 90s and they had crack parents, who did they learn anything from? Yes, you may have had grandmoms and aunties and other people that helped, you know, rear these children, but 9 times out of 10, these kids learned on their own. So if you had kids that had kids in the 90s, those kids in the 90s then had kids in the 2000s, so who taught them? Because their grandparents are crack addicts. And that just goes on and on and on. And as we look at this generation now, I'm sorry to say, this is just my opinion, this generation is so lost, it's not even funny. You know, they're locking up kids 8 years old. They don't even have laws on the books to stipulate with these kids. The social services aren't stepping in because they don't know how to handle this. And they're charging these children with adult crimes, and they're 8. They don't even have their reasoning. And we know in Islam, until you become pubescent, you're not held accountable for your sins. So if you have an 8-year-old girl or an 8-year-old boy that committed a crime, they don't know any better. What are we going to do to prevent this from happening to our families? So before you say, oh, okay, that's because, you know, the family, this and that, they weren't paying attention to the kids, and, you know, their parents just let them run all over the place. Your child could be in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong person. I've seen it happen. Good kid, never in any kind of trouble, just with the wrong person. And the police and the judicial system, all they see is a little black kid that's going to now occupy one of their jail cells. And I'm going to tell you guys this, and again, this is just my opinion, but I've seen it firsthand. You could pay $25,000 for a lawyer, and you still get convicted of a crime. Why? Because you're black. Those lawyers, those judges, the state, all those people are in cahoots with each other. If you think I'm lying, go to any courtroom, because you can. You can go sit in the courtroom, you can sit in one most cases, and you will see the state conspiring with the person's lawyer, and then the lawyer and the state conspiring with the judge. And you know what it winds up to? Okay, you won three cases. So it's time for you to take a fallback on this one. Yeah, we ain't going to give him the maximum, but we want darn near give it to him. I seen it happen firsthand. I seen it happen to a family member. Pay all that money for a lawyer to still get sentenced with the maximum. Why? Because it's a big business to them. They don't care how much money you pay. They don't care what family you come from. If you're black and you're a warm body, you can fill your jail cell and you can fill it for as long as they want you to be in there. Why big money for them? Wa alaikum assalam.
You have a question for me today? You have I think three callers. You have three callers who want to ask a question in. I mean, it's one from area code 610 who wants to ask a question.
Okay, you can bring them through.
So whenever you're ready.
Okay, bring them through.
I did. I patched him in. I'm waiting for him to talk.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Cordero. You have a call. You have a question for me or a statement?
Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Wa alaikum assalam.
Oh, this is Brother Salim from...
You're breaking up.
This is Brother Salim from Cincinnati. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Assalamu alaikum. How you doing today?
Alhamdulillah, I'm good. No, I was calling from... what threw me off was the narrator or the operator said, calling from the 606, I'm from the 513. So I didn't know...
Oh, okay.
That's my mistake. Yeah.
That's okay. And you were talking about what can we do to prevent our African American families or our black Muslim families or just black men in general from being pipelined into the prison industrial complex. And I also, as I said when I was on the show last time, that I believe that we're suffering from an economic problem. So when you don't have opportunities to compete in other arenas, which is that of industries and businesses, you tend to go to the underground market to make your money. And most of the people I know or the hustlers that I know and grew up with, they went into selling drugs because they wanted money. They wanted resources. They wanted opportunities. So the easiest way to do that was to start selling drugs. So the solution I feel like is that black men who are of age, who understand what's going on, have to get serious about building an economy for not only themselves but for their children to come into, so they won't have to get ushered in or be tempted to be able to go into these underground markets such as the streets to sell drugs. So if I have my own business, right, I do real estate. So the whole goal is to build up a real estate business so that my son can come and work for my company. So if a young man knows that his father is an entrepreneur, has a business, and your whole goal as a man should be to be grooming your family member, your son and daughter, to inherit that business. So I think that's a great solution so that our children don't get ushered into this prison pipeline. So that's all I wanted to add to the dialogue, and I wanted to know what you thought about that solution. Hello?
Can y'all hear me now? Can y'all hear me? Okay, so the other caller might have got dropped. So I'll just speak with that, and Brother Salim, if you could call back in, they'll patch you through. So as far as you were saying about, African Americans, creating a firm foundation with a job for our children to follow in our footsteps, I believe that's a good starting point. But what do we do for those children who don't want to do that? They may not want to follow in their father's footsteps. Let's say the father had an automobile shop, and they don't want to be a mechanic. That's not their dream.
you know, to do that, because, you know, you do have kids that want to, you know, blaze their own trail and so forth. How do we, my question would then be, how do we, you know, take those kids who don't want to follow in our footsteps, how do we guide them to still stay on the same correct path? You know, it's all well and good. We can plan all day, and whatever happens may not pan out how we want it to be. We all have big hopes and dreams for our children to become successful, you know, to live out their life and have their own families and not become a product of, you know, the institutionalization system and so forth. So we can try to direct our kids, and we can always do that. So, again, it's not something that we can control, but it's something that we can try to avoid at all costs. Brother Salim, are you on? If not, I know that we
yes.
had two
Hello?
Others. Oh, you're on. Okay.
Yes.
I'm not sure
okay.
if you
I didn't know I was. You know, I wasn't sure if I got put back on or not. Alhamdulillah.
Okay.
I did hear your response to that, and you were saying that some children might not want to go and follow the path of their mother or their father or whatever, the trail that you have blazed for them or hope that they get
right.
into. But you know what I found out interesting, and I see this as a cultural dynamic, where if you look at Asian and Arab families and how they rear their children, particularly the Asian community, they don't give their kids too many options. Like, they don't, you know, and that's one thing I think that, you know, they just like, listen, you're going to be a doctor, and I don't give a damn how you feel about it right now. Now, the bottom line is, I have the resources at this point in time. I'm paying for your education. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So they don't give their kids options. It's either you succeed in an arena that's going to be profitable for you and make this family proud, or you're considered
right.
a failure. And so I think that sometimes we as, you know, African Americans or black people, we're not firm with our children as far as accepting excellence from them. So my son might not like IT. He might not like
right.
being a lawyer or a doctor. But the bottom line is, at a certain age, he doesn't have a choice right now. So I'm still going to gear him to that. And what I found out is a lot of these Asians and these Arabs and other cultures, Pakistanis, they don't like going into these fields, these, you know, and these medical fields. Their family, they have a culture instilled in their family that is required of them. So what I'm saying is that's what's missing, I think, with the African American and the black family. And it's like, oh, well, no, you do what you want to do. We need to stop telling our kids that. Give them a direction, tell them to follow this direction, and hopefully you have the resources to where and the money. So if they, you know, get off that path, you can still support them in their goal, whether it's music. Okay, well, do you have the money to facilitate your son going to piano lessons?
Right.
So it still boils down to having the resources, no matter what path your
right.
son, daughter, whoever would take. But I'm thinking that we're just too lenient on our children as far as we're leaving the door open to, you know, all of your dreams. But it's put them on a path and make sure they stay on that path, whether they like it or not. And then as they get older, we can discuss some things. But when they're younger, putting them on a path of excellence from the beginning, I think it's a requirement. And me and my ex-wife, we put our heads about that, because I felt like, you know, she had the same philosophy, the same viewpoint as, well, you know, let's do what they want to do. Like, no, this is a time where kids, you got to give them direction and give them a path and make sure they don't waver from that. You know, I know, and it might sound harsh. It might sound harsh, but
no,
I believe that's the way to go.
Harsh. It's not harsh, and I'm going to, inshallah, I'm going to do a show on this. Why is slavery still affecting us to the day? Because the reason why black people are like the way they are is because we're still in that slavery mode. I'm serious. Like, people don't understand. Like, if you're from a different culture, if you're from, like you said, Asian and Pakistani, Indian, or even Caribbean island, if you're from the islands, it's a whole different mindset. And I'll explain real quick, briefly, why it is the way it is. In the Caribbean islands and most of these other countries, you have to pay for education. So kids know from birth, if I see mom or dad working hard, fingers bleeding, working horrible jobs. I mean, these people are cleaning out sewer systems, making less than $2 an hour. And these kids see that from birth. Here in America, mama has not even graduated from eighth grade. I don't even know who my dad is. Mom been on welfare forever because she still live with grandma, and grandma's still on welfare. Got two uncles that live with them, and they not working. In America, we do not value education.
It's deeper than that. And like I said back into my last episode, until you understand racism and white supremacy, you won't understand the magnitude in which you have been disenfranchised. Now, that excuse, no. You have to understand the disenfranchisement that some people have went through and fight like hell to never have your children experience that. So it still goes back to what honesty. So, but you have people out here who I call them Negroes, who just refuse to understand the condition that they're in and understand white supremacy, and they wanna deflect and they wanna, but knowing what's going on is half the battle. If you know, like, listen, our people are dealing with some real deep rooted emotional issues. We're dealing with a cultural identity that we don't have. And so if you know this, you will be a lot more understanding and patient with your people, but also you will be a lot more firm and not allowing a bunch of nigger stuff to happen and go on within your, with yourself and your children. You know, not wanting to be educated, that's nigger stuff, okay? You know, not wanting to get out here and work and provide and build, that's dustiness. So, you know, it's a mindset that you have to really, really have to overcome, you know what I'm saying? And there are some people who just are refusing to buckle down, understand what's happening with them, and understand how serious what's going on with your people and how at risk your children are at this point in time. You know, I mean, it keeps me up at night knowing that I got two small sons. They're going to be coming up as black males in this society, and the society is dead set on their destruction and destroying them.
Right.
So you have to prepare your kids now from day one to be excellent and understand and execute the agenda and the goal. And that goal is excellence, and that goal is to accomplish things that their parents didn't accomplish. So, and knowing that, you have to be kind of hard on your children a little bit, you know, and let them know. You know, I see a brother that comes to the mosque that I go to locally, and he got his sons with him all the time. And then they're saying, yes, sir, no, sir. I mean, he got these boys on point, you hear me? And people might look at that and say, wow. But no, your children have to be geared for the situation and geared towards excellence from day one, period.
Right.
There's no more excuses. There's no more deflecting. And the men who understand what's going on have to get serious about stepping their game up and building an economy so that your babies can come work in, because everybody's competing against you. Against you. The Pakistanis, the Arabs, all these cultures are coming in competing against the African American and the black people, and they're building an economy off of us. We have made a lot of these cultures rich. We got sisters who go out and make the Asians rich. You know, we got brothers and sisters who go to these little corner stores and buy liquor and buy the cigars and buy all that stuff. You are helping enrich another culture, period. So that's my whole spiel. I can go on and on about this all night.
We got another caller on. So if you could put the caller from area code 914 through, I can answer their questions or listen to their response to the call so far. Assalamu alaikum, are you there? Area code 914.
Yeah, wa alaikum assalam. Yes, I'm here.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank God.
Did you have a comment or a response you wanted to place out here on this call today?
Yes, well, you know, there's a saying that there is no excuse for ignorance of the law. And you think about that.
Mm-hmm.
No excuse for ignorance of the law. That means if you don't have a family member, your parents don't know the law, they are ignorant, they can't teach you the law, so it's impossible for them to prevent you from falling victim to the law.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, like I listened to some people that's very informed concerning laws and how laws and things are set up.
Right.
It said if you are stopped sometimes we ask why so many of our African American black men in prison, because they don't understand the law. They don't know how it operates. Their parents don't know, and those who do know don't inform them.
Right.
If you're stopped on the street for whatever reason, and the police officer asks you to empty your pockets out. Now, if you have a piece of a reefer in your pocket,
right,
and you pull it out, now the law says now you expose it to the public. Now you expose it to the public based on the laws and everything. Now that's something to you can be arrested for.
Right.
So if you don't know that, and you have a reefer in your pocket, and you're arrested, and you're told to empty your pockets, and you pull it out, now you have a reefer, and it's open in the public, possible for selling or whatever. Now you can be arrested. Now if you don't know that law, you fall victim to that.
Right.
Same with a young girl. If her parents don't know, or no one else has told her the possibility of being caught in a vehicle with someone who's caught for a crime.
Right.
This young girl, 15, 16 years old, what it could be, saying why young women in prison. If this man's a drug dealer or whatever criminal that record he is, he's doing, then if this girl is caught in that car with him, she can be classified as an accomplice.
Accessory, right. You make a very good point. That's a great point that you put out there. That's excellent. You're absolutely right. And if you don't know, in various states, those laws could be different. Like you said, you pulling that marijuana out your pocket and exposing it to the public, now you can be arrested. But like you said, if you don't know what your rights are and what laws you could break when you comply with the officers, it could put you in more harm than good. That's excellent. That's an excellent point you made. Like you said,
mm-hmm.
I guess we have to start learning how to educate ourselves on our local laws. And even when traveling, we have to be mindful of laws that are, you know, different than what our state laws is. It reminds me of the young lady who was licensed to carry here in Pennsylvania, and she drove over to Jersey, and she got stopped, and they were looking to send her to jail for 10 or more years. Even though she was licensed in Pennsylvania, she didn't know that the same law didn't apply in Jersey, and they didn't even give her a pass. Like, she told them she had the gun. She said, oh, I'm licensed or whatever. And they locked her up. I mean, this young lady was going to lose her kids, her job, her home, everything hard that she worked for, just because she didn't understand the law. So, you know, I appreciate you, caller, for giving that insight. That is a valuable thing, a valuable resource that we should all look into. Anybody that's listening on this call, and I'll put it out there even after the call, that, you know, this is something that we should do. We should educate ourselves on our local laws. And, you know, like I live in Delaware County, which is like a suburb of Philadelphia. Our laws are completely different from Philadelphia. So if you come out here and you do something, the law is completely different and it's harsher, because they know that people from Philadelphia come out here and commit crime. So they throw the book at people that's from Philadelphia out here. So that's
I propose a different strategy.
Right.
Can I propose a different strategy than that? I mean, if you control the money, and this is to say, I think Rockefeller, one of these philosophers said this, whoever controls the money, I care not who controls the laws. So my thing is, if you get enough money, see, the reason why the law is always not in our favor is because black people are the weakest and the poorest people on earth. So all the laws are really formulated to really keep you in poverty and keep the attack on you. Until you get enough money and power, you can start controlling levels of government. Then you can start controlling the police department. Then you can start controlling the court system. So if you look at any group who has gained any kind of power or wealth or influence here in America, they start electing these officials that's going to give them certain advantages, you know, on a local level, on a city level, on a state level. So what I'm saying is black people, we haven't got our money up enough to be able to control. You know, I'm talking about having cops on the payroll. You know, like, listen, this is our community. We own this community. You know what I'm saying? Here's a couple of stacks, $3,000, $4,000 is on our payroll, on our books. Don't come here and bother our children. These are our businesses. You can come in here, get a free sandwich or whatever you want to, but don't bother my our people who come in here and shop. None of that. So what I'm saying is we need to get to the point where we start buying off these cops and buying off, you know, these judges.
So that when our kids go in front of these judges.
I'm talking about something less deeper than that. I'm talking about money talks. Listen, you in our pocket now. We own you. We need to start owning some of these politicians. And these governors.
I don't know about all that.
I think that's possible. That's what we need. Is black folks need to get to that point. Listen.
We know one hand washes the other. We know that. You know what I'm saying?
Get on that. We got to start playing dirty. We got to play dirty out here. We got to start, you know, bribing and cheating. And we know that you took this 20 grand from us. We're going to start blackmailing and, you know, let them know, like, listen, you play for our team now. We gave you 20 grand. We voted for you. You owe us. This is my son. We coming to this courtroom.
Well,
he better not get to me.
Right. We know how
that
works.
We got to get on that level. We should be on that level. Yeah. We start greasing some palms, you know?
Now, you know, bribe is a federal crime, you know?
Exactly. Well, I mean,
when you put things out there like that without a understanding, people get a misunderstanding.
Well,
now you go and bribe someone. Now you definitely going to prison. So you know, don't put it out there.
Hey,
like
listen,
that.
you going to prison, whether it's a gram of coke or a gram of crack cocaine, a couple ounces of weed. You going to jail anyway. I mean, that's just bottom because of your skin color. So my thing is, we need to start, you know, getting up here and paying off some people. And letting them know who, you know, that we got them in our pocket. That's what the mafia does. All these groups who got influence in this America are using their money as power for them.
But brother, don't go. I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but don't go that way. Don't follow the criminals.
I mean, at this point,
the
gloves
got to
come off, sir. The gloves got to come off. We can't be nice to these folks. We got to start using our money to get back at these folks.
Don't follow the ways of criminals.
Right.
I don't believe a favor is me being a criminal. I feel like, listen, I paid for something, a service, whether it be a congressman, a police officer, I paid you for a service. My service might have been not to harass my people. I paid you good money for that service. I don't feel like that's bribery. That's me paying for a service. Just like these business owners, when they see a homeless guy sleeping in front of their storefront, they call the police and say, hey, there's this homeless guy sleeping in front of my store. Because I make money for the city, I pay my taxes. I have the right to use my money in the capacity that I feel like it should be used for. And I feel like my money's going to be used to let the cops know that, hey, don't harass my children, don't harass my family. This is my street. This is my business. This is what I own. And you come here just to help me protect what I own because I have the money to pay your bills and your taxes. So we can start using our money and our economy as a weapon.
Well, Salim, look, here in Philly, we have something. We have what we do is we don't outright bribe you, but what we do is local police officers that you're cool with, they give you their business card. So if you get pulled over, you usually get out a free jail card. That's
when the cop pulls us over, you just throw some money out the window and just drive off. Here you go, money, just grab off. I won't have it to that point when we like that as black folks, when we just got everything so phoned up. It's like, listen, you know, we own all the industries. We running things now. You pull behind me, you should be able to get ignorant.
But this is the thing.
You should be able to get foul, everything.
We have to get some kind of cohesiveness with ourselves. We so against ourselves. It don't make no sense. Like, it's sickening that we can't even come together as a people first. Forget everybody else trying to, you know, we trying to win over everybody else. We can't even keep it together ourselves.
We have
people who are, okay, I'm from this part, you know, like, and I'm going to say this, Africans from Africa don't necessarily like African Americans or black Americans.
Well, you know what the problem is?
Caribbean,
you got...
people from the Caribbean islands don't consider themselves black. I mean, it is just
what it is.
And even within the division, like you come from North Philly, oh, I'm better than South Philly and West Oakland. We can't even keep it together for ourselves, trying to make sure that my sister who's selling this is benefiting or, you know, trying to better herself. It's not, we can't even get that kind of cohesiveness amongst ourselves. Nevertheless, we want other people to respect us. It's not happening. We can't even man our homes. We can't even keep cohesion up in the house.
So I agree.
How are we going to get that from other people? They look at us like a joke.
Also,
this is why they take advantage of us. And this is why they take advantage of us.
You're right, sister. And it's all about getting, you know, like me, you know, I'm Muslim, but, you know, I always say the term black first, which means, you know, my blindness, and it might sound selfish, but I don't really care. You know, I'm only focused on my people right now. I'm not focused on what's going on over in Palestine. I'm not focused on none of that right now because I'm focused on the genocide of my people right here in America. And I do feel like a lot of the Muslims, when they say Shahada ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, they forgot completely that, I guess they was black. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's the issue, but
well,
I understand that we do.
No, that's not the issue. It's just that in Islam, after you recite the Shahada, there's no racism in Islam. And
no,
you know,
it's not.
Muhammad,
it's not racism in Islam.
Alayhi Salaam said in his last message to the last cookbook that, you know, no Arab is better than an Arab and no black is better than the black. But if we can't, as a people, see past that ourselves. I mean, I have people who are cutthroat and will tell you to their face, I'm not supporting you. Why not? I tell people, I'll support anybody who Muslim first before I support anybody else first. But people don't even want to come together as a people. Blacks don't want to come together. They don't. They just don't.
I think things are changing. I really do. I think things are changing. I think a lot of black people are realizing that the attack is so real. I mean, some of them are. And some of them are refusing, you know, they putting their heads in the sand. But I think it's changing. I think with podcasts like this, you know, people communicating what's going on. And you know, I think we need a lot more brothers coming out and being uncompromising about their blackness as Muslims. And I got a few on my page who really are down this, you know, we Muslims. We love Islam. We're not trying to say we hate on any Arab or any, you know, person who's not black. But what we're saying is that our experience as black people is unique. Even though we are Muslims, we have to be aware of this uniqueness that's going on with our, you know, with us and what's happening to our people here in America. And no thobe, no kufi, or no hijab is going to spare us from what the reality is. Now, I don't feel like that's haram. I don't feel like that's anything. I feel like that's just being real.
And I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. Because, like, when, you know, people see me, they see, first, they see me as a woman. They see me as African descent. And then when they see my last name, they like, oh, she's an immigrant. You know, I got so many things going against me. It's crazy. But what I get people to understand is I let people understand who I am. And then, you know, once people understand who I am, they feel more comfortable around me. But everybody has to get to that point where they're comfortable with themselves. And once you're comfortable with yourself and you educate yourself and you learn the laws and you learn what you know, how education can be beneficial to you and you can learn how to be an entrepreneur, then you can start rolling those things out to your family and then to your children, and then you can collectively, once you have your house in order, because that's the first and foremost thing. If the foundation ain't solid, I don't care what you try to do, you can preach to whoever you want, but people won't look back at your house and see how your house is in order. So if your house isn't in order, then you can't go out there preaching to nobody else because your foundation isn't solid. And until we can get our foundation solid, then we can start to work on those other things. This one of the statistics that I was going to mention before, you know, everybody joined in. Nationwide, African Americans represent 26% of the juvenile arrests, 44% of African American youth are detained, and 58% of the youth are sent to jail. That's alarming. That's alarming. These governments and these counties and wherever you are, they are now targeting our children. And
because we are weak. Because we are very. Because we are weak.
I'm gonna tell you the reason for that is because now a lot of the black women are in jail. They got the black women. They starting to get the black women now. They racking them up. They racking the black women.
Yeah.
They already got the black men. Listen. They already got the black men. They got the black women. What's left?
The babies.
Children.
The babies.
The children.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying. So how can you be at this point, knowing all that, how can you be a person that's squeamish in the situation? How can you be a person that's looking the other way and worrying about all these other groups and when they're coming after your babies? So I'm saying, I'm putting the ATP out, like, you know, we need to be uncompromising as a black Muslim. We've got to start getting our money together, being, you know, supporting each other, and get out the nigga stuff. You know what I'm saying? We need to really get our stuff together. And I'm starting with myself. You know, I should be out here, you know, building up businesses, being better with my children. I thought with me, I'm harder on myself than anybody. What I'm saying is, I agree with you, sister. You have to start in the home first and go from there. But it's getting real serious out here. And I just sometimes, you know, I can't even sleep at night.
What's the name of this program?
This is Religion Means Alive. This is we do talks every Saturday and Sunday that I host, Fadira Aisha Muhammad, that I host. But today's topic is called From the Jail to the Streets. And, you know, I wanted to address some of the issues and concerns that I had from the African American perspective on the numbers and the rates and the statistics of why African Americans, and that includes African American males, African American women, and now African American juveniles that are being incarcerated at alarming rates, and what's being done to help them transition from back out of the incarcerated state back into society. So, you know, those were some of the issues that I was addressing today. Did you have other questions you wanted to ask?
No, I called because I thought of religion on our Religion Means Alive, but I hadn't heard the host, ma'am, Alpha Muhammad. I hadn't heard his voice, so that's our accent. I thought maybe he had changed the program or something because I haven't heard his voice at all.
No. This Imam Alfred still runs the call. I'm just co-hosting for him on Saturdays and Mondays. Yeah, I'm co-hosting.
All right, okay.
So he lets me run the show. He lets me run the show on Saturdays and Mondays. So, yeah, normally
okay, now,
he does an introduction, but he's trying to, you know, he's trying to put me out there and let me do my thing right now. So I hope that's not a problem.
No, you explained it. You explained it. I understand now you're the co-host on Saturdays. So I understand.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for the explanation. All right.
You're welcome.
All right.
Is there anybody else? Wa alaikum assalam. Is there another call out there? I think we had a caller from a 267 area code. That's Philly. We got a Philly call out there. Somebody wanted to say something. If so, you can be patched through. If anybody else wants to. Somebody
Hello?
On? Yes.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Caesar.
Wa alaikum salam.
I think part of it is, have you ever heard of Stockholm Syndrome?
Yes.
I think part of our problem is a lot of us here suffer from Stockholm Syndrome, yet we don't know it, so we can't identify with it, but we know that something is wrong. I do believe that the other part of it is the illusion of wealth, and we chase wealth. Like, it's either get rich or die trying, to quote Curtis. And with that mentality, you block everything out. You shun everything else. And I was reading the hadith the other day that it kind of comforted me and with what I was going through. And it was saying that do not be upset because you don't have a whole lot of wealth. Because those that do have a lot of wealth, they have a longer reckoning to deal with the law because of the wealth that they have and what they did with it. Those of us that don't have a lot of wealth won't have as long a reckoning. but we don't teach a lot of our kids that. We don't, we recite Quran, we recite Hadith, but we don't live Quran, we don't live Hadith, and that's the problem. And I believe that, like what you said, me and my brother was having this conversation a while back, you know, what happened to all the crack babies? Well, they became crack parents. They became crack grandparents. And our great-grandparents, they weren't that far removed from slavery. So they still had a connection with it. Whereas the kids today, that's almost totally erased from them. That's like a Disney fairy tale to them, as graphic as it was. So therefore, they can't identify with it. So they're, again, on get rich or die trying mentality. And, you know, everybody's following in the footsteps of Shaitan, and Shaitan is your open enemy, yet you follow him right into the hellfire and not even care, and then blindly follow.
I got a few questions for the caller that's on right now.
So
you saying that you had read a hadith that comforted you in a situation that you were currently going through. And the hadith you said that you read was about how the people who have wealth versus the people who don't have wealth, their day of reckoning would not compare to the ones who didn't have wealth. Is that kind of correct? Just to kind of paraphrase.
Yes.
So is that being used, or should that be used as an excuse or motivate you not to go out here and build and create wealth and create something for yourself?
It shouldn't be used as an excuse. But it should be used as a guideline for what you're doing and not trying to be blind by chasing a wolf. Because Shaitan, when the first two coins were ever minted, Shaitan put them in his eyes and said, by these two coins, I swear, I will seduce the whole world. So whenever you see somebody and they have the dollar signs in their eyes, they've been seduced by Shaitan. This whole world is an illusion. Right. You know, and there's nothing wrong with trying to build up wealth to leave something behind. But remember that you will be held accountable for every dollar that you have as well. How did you spend it? What did you do with it? How did you obtain it? You know, and we don't teach that.
Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, sir.
Sorry. You were talking wrong.
No, because I'm just saying, because, you know, and this is the thing that I get a lot of the, you know, brothers about is, you know, using the Quran and the Sunnah to kind of justify what I call dusty behavior, not to be motivated, not to do anything for yourself, because
not to cut you off. It's not about justifying dusty behavior, and I understand what the caller is saying because I agree with that. What happens is we get so caught up in this world and we don't prepare for the hereafter. As we are in this world, we are supposed to be travelers. We are just traveling.
But you gotta, there's a part in the doing that you have to play a part in the doing as well. You have your part in the role in the doing as well.
Absolutely, but we shouldn't get attached to this world. And as the caller said, if you read Hadith, there's Hadith that says, when you obtain more, you have to give back more. So you get all these people who you look at, these Saudi princes, and they got billions and billions of dollars. They're held more accountable than we are. You know, like if you're poor, you don't have to pay zakat. But if you got money and you don't have any debt, you're required to pay zakat. So, I mean, it goes into more that I understand that Allah has decreed everything that we will have in this world already. It's already written. The only thing that can change it, and not really even change it, is dua. When you make dua, it lets Allah know that, okay, what was written is going to be easier. They don't know it, but they asked me for reprieve on that, so I'm going to make it easy for them. So, you know, like...
I mean, I approach it from a different standard.
I'm not looking to be a millionaire. I'm not. I mean, could I obtain it? Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not looking to be a millionaire. Because, look, if we're going to be on the rap tip, more money, more problems. And that's the God honest truth. I don't want no more problems. I'm comfortable right where I'm at.
It brings everything back to circle as far as the problems that the youth chase. Because, again, all they see, you turn on TV, what you see cars, rims, chicks flashing their booties on TV. You turn off the TV, you turn on the radio, what you hear every rap song, I got this, I got that, I could take your girl, I'll blow trees. There's nothing in the way of progressive.
Can I just interject really fast? Can I just? This is Imam Alfred Muhammad, son. I've been listening this whole time, and I've been like, you know, I agree with the brother who's talking right now. You know, more money, more problems. I mean, I've heard the song 1,000 times. Trust me, you know, I know about it, and I know that yes, money does cause problems, but and you know, in this country, you're not gonna get nowhere without no money. I mean, that's just
get to the money. That's what I'm saying. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
But I don't understand.
We're like, look, if you don't have no money in this society, in this country, especially this country, you're not going to get anywhere. And like when I grow up, like for me, my future, when I grow up, I want to go into law and I want to make a lot of money. It doesn't mean I'm a greedy person. It's just that
I want to go somewhere.
You know what I mean?
That's how you go about going and your intentions.
It's like when I grow up. Hold on, I don't mean to cut you off, but when I grow up and I make a lot of money, I'm gonna give back to my people. At the same time, while remaining,
sure. Alone,
I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna do what I gotta do. Like it's very simple. Like, I'm not gonna get greedy. Like I know where my heart is. You know what I mean? I know my. And if I'm a billionaire, that's even great for me because I get to help out my people more. Like me and my brother.
In the best of manners. As a Muslim, you do things in the best of manners.
You could go. Yeah.
I just want to say this from looking at this as from a non-American standpoint. People don't understand. In America, you have so much opportunity to be able to succeed. You get free education here in the United States, so you can take that. You can absorb that education. And wait. I want to state my point. You can take the education, and then you can get scholarships, you can get grants, you can get a full ride to college if you know how to go about that. Okay, there's also resources. If you're poor, your family can go get welfare. You can go get welfare, you can go get health, you can go get food stamps, you can go get cash. If you're a parent, if you're a mother with children under 5, you can get WIC. You can go get that. You can go get Section 8. You can wait on the list and get Section 8. Okay, I'm not done. There's so many other programs out there for people who are poor. If you come from a third world country or a fourth world country like Haiti, if you are poor, you are poor. You have nothing. Do you know those people eat mud cakes to fill their stomach? They have no welfare. They have nothing. All they have is their education. And when I hear people that say here in America, oh, I want to get rich, I want to get rich, I want to get rich. Money is the root to all evil.
No, it's
people
not.
Say, oh, I'm going to help people.
No, it's
I'm
not.
Going to do this. I'm going to do that.
Serious.
Oh, my gosh.
Money is the root of all evil. The lack of money is the root of all evil.
No, because y'all are American. I'm telling you, if you came from a different country where you didn't have the resources,
they come over here to get. Listen, you come over here to a new country to get to the money. That's why all these girls on green cards to get over here to make the money. They win.
And they can.
I don't understand this.
Americans don't know no better.
I say something
about
the money.
What do most people, when they come over here to this country, what do they? They don't come here for the almighty, you know, Allah. They come here for the almighty dollar. They come here to make money.
Because they know what to get the money, and African Americans are doing.
We use religion to justify us not doing it.
We just suffer from a certain mindset that blocks us from doing it. But once we break out of that, whatever we want to do.
Can I interject real quick?
About making money. Yeah, you go ahead.
Get to the money. A lot of brothers and sisters that come from places overseas, the islands, they're more connected to their roots than we are. So, therefore, they can trace back so many creations to say this, that, and the other thing. I come from here. I just found out where I'm from. I'm from Ethiopia. I didn't know that for a very long time. The reason why I'm bringing that up is because at the same time, I know, and part of it is my pride, which I must work on, is that there are certain jobs that I will not do
If somebody said, you got to clean this toilet bowl, I'm going to say, you know what? Nah, I'm cool. But that's my pride. On the other hand, a brother will swallow his pride and say, look, if I need a job, look, I need a job because I'm about to be kicked out X, Y, and Z. That's the parallel, and that's what a lot of us.
Or you can make your own. Or you can create your own job. You can create your own job.
A lot of us don't swallow our pride, and that's the main problem. It's the pride. It's the bravado that we got. It's you can do this, that, and the other thing. Swallow your pride, because if you have pride anywhere inside you, even an atom's weight, look at an ant. Think about how much your ant weighs. If you have that much pride in you, you are not getting into paradise.
That's true. That, you know, and that just really proves my point even further. You know, I mean, like,
so you want money as being prideful. You want to have money as being prideful. You want to have a better opportunity for your children and create a business as you being prideful.
Hey, look,
that's being prideful.
I'm
just trying to figure out what's being said, really.
No, if that's what you want to do, if you want to, you know, get a business, you want your kids to follow in your footsteps to prevent them from, you know, being part of the incarcerated system that's here in America, then I'm all for it. Nobody said don't do it.
No,
nobody said don't attain money.
But so I'm just saying, how do you justify a position?
Hold on 1 second. You, a famous man once said, the best thing that you can do for the poor is not be one of them. That's the best thing you can do for the poor is not be one of them. The best thing you can do, if you want to really help out the
poor, as a Muslim, though,
be on their level.
As a Muslim,
come back down. Exactly.
As a Muslim, you're supposed to do things in the best of manner.
I'm still speaking as a Muslim.
You're supposed to do things in the best of manner. If you don't have money,
don't do that. Nobody said don't do that.
If you don't have any,
nobody said don't do that.
You will never help them out.
And see, this is the thing. Another thing that people fail to realize and look at it with this government and what this country does. This government and this country is set up to help immigrants. They're not set up here. Look, let me explain something to you. A black Haitian come over here through Miami. They'll ship his behind real quick. But if a light-skinned could pass for white Dominican comes, they'll give him asylum here. These Asians, like you said, the Asians, Arabs, and all of them, if they want to open up a business, they give them a $10,000 tax credit. They give them loans.
That's not true either.
But we don't have that resource.
Hold on a second. That right there is a problem in itself. We believe that, the Asians get this and we don't get this. They get that
and
we don't get this. They don't get that. All right, so what? Work 10 times harder. Work 10 times harder and give
it to the
nobody's
saying it.
And first off, the thing about the Asians, the tax credit, I don't even know if that's true, because we, as blacks, we worked hard to get a lot of things off of us. We get all these things with scholarships.
They get
students
to come
all
here.
We're black, okay? All because we're minorities. So when I hear stuff about how Asians get this and so-and-so get this and so-and-so, I'm just when I hear my friends say it myself, I'm 18, I'm still in high school. I'm getting ready to go to college. But, you know, when I hear people say this stuff to my friends, like, oh, man, money is this. I'm just like, bro, like, so what? Like, if you got to work harder, go out there and get yours. Like, me personally, I don't want to be an average person for the rest of my life.
You don't want to be broken dusty. You don't want to be broken dusty.
Exactly.
Period.
That's a good goal to have.
That's a good saying. I don't want to be broken dusty. Exactly.
Guys,
I want to help
out. Yeah, period.
This was an excellent show. This was an excellent show. Yeah. We're almost at the 8:30 mark. So I want to be able to provide some people with some resources that they can reach out to. In Philadelphia, they have the RISE program. It's the Reintegration Services. And you can find out more information via their website, RISE.philla.gov, or you can call them at 215-683-3370. And everybody knows how to reach me on Facebook. If you have questions, you can go to the webpage, Religion Means Alive, Quadira section, if you have more questions. And we got about 2 minutes left, guys. So if y'all want to put it through a last closing statement before we close out. Called
the Enterprise Center. They're on 46th and Market. They're a real good community service center, and they help out with a lot of business problems, X, Y, and Z, you name it, they got it. But there's a ayat in the Quran, and it says, the hour of judgment is drawing nigh, and the moon has been cleft asunder, but if any see a sign, they turn away and say it is the transit magic. This ayat is warning, basically, that there has already been enough knowledge to come, so you can't justify by saying you don't know X, Y, and Z. And you have to go out and seek the knowledge, and the knowledge, hopefully, inshallah, will prevent you from doing what you do should you act upon it and you try to follow it the right way. Assalamu alaikum. Y'all have a blessed weekend.
Wa alaikum salam.
All right.
All right. 1 minute.
Keep
it short.
Before we go off the air, my dad wanted me to make a few housekeeping announcements, and that's that August 28th, the 29th, and the 30th is a he's representing the mosque here's annual convention 2015 that's going to be happening once again on the 28th, the 29th, and the 30th. So
ooh,
I just want to say that before we go off the air.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Salim, right. You wanted to say something?
Just thanks for having me on. And that's pretty much it. I can be found on Facebook, Brother Salim Abdul Mutakalam. You can add me as a friend if you agree or disagree with my viewpoint. You can add me on Facebook, and we can talk about it.
I agree.
Or you can give me a call.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, you should agree, because I think get to the money. Get to the money, period. I mean, I ain't saying leave Islam and leave the deen. You got to get to this money, family. It's about this money now. We got to get to this money business, you know.
All right.
I got to say.
Okay.
Get it before.
I want to thank everybody for joining in this day on Religion Means the Lives. The topic from the jail to the streets. I hope we were able to help a few people and enlighten a few people, and I appreciate it. Join me again on Monday, inshallah, at 7 o'clock. I'll put the post out there on what the topic will be. We'd like to keep it hot and keep the topics coming. So, inshallah, I appreciate y'all joining. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Proud of you.
All right.